Mr. Greenlee.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Andrew Greenlee, and I'm here on behalf of Jose Benitez. The government made three stipulations in open court at the change of plea hearing. First, it stipulated that the use of a firearm is an element of the offense as it alleged in this indictment. Second, it said that the failure to prove the use of a firearm during the course of trial could be a defense to the aggravated bank robbery charge. And third, and this is really the most crucial, it said the government would not argue to the jury that the instrument used in the bank robbery was anything other than a firearm. Mr. Benitez took the government at its word. He relied on those assurances.
That stipulation was made before the guilty plea proceedings, was it not?
He arrived at court with the intention of pleading guilty that day. It was at the
stipulation was before that. Is that not correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. But it was never withdrawn. Stipulations are just as binding in criminal cases as they are in civil cases. And Mr. Benitez predicated his entire theory of defense on the government's assurances that it would never come into court and argue to the jury that it was anything other than a firearm.
Well, didn't the defendant have reason to know, though, that the court was still up in the air on that issue?
I'm glad, maybe that's a good way to put it, that the court was still up in the air. There was no definitive ruling at the by the district court regarding surplusage, regarding constructive amendment. I have the ruling.
This is not a case like Cancelliere, where it was the end of the trial before the indictment was amended.
It is a case like Cancelliere. It's very close on the facts of Cancelliere. The indictment was read to the jury as charged with the firearm language during the voir dire and the initial charge to the jury before the case started. It was read to the jury. Then if you look at the verdict form, that firearm language is taken out of the verdict form, and they found him guilty without the narrowing language of, to wit, a firearm. So it is like Cancelliere, where the language was omitted at the end of the case.
Also in Cancelliere, the extra language heightened the mens rea, but that's not the case here, is it?
It's not the case here. It doesn't go to the mens rea. It is more in that regard like the Narog case, where there's this broad statutory language that's used, and then there's a narrowing construction at the very end. In Narog, it was, to wit, methamphetamine. So they specified the controlled substance that they had possessed. It was methamphetamine. Here they said, to wit, the dangerous device was a firearm.
But arguably, in Narog, that was also a heightening of the mens rea because the defendant had to know that it was meth.
That's not true. The all that was required to be proved in Narog was that there was a controlled substance that they possessed, that the pseudoamphetamine or the pseudoephedrine was going to be used to make a controlled substance. That's all they statutorily had to prove. So there was no statutory requirement that there was that they had to prove that it was methamphetamine.
I went and looked at the jury charge to see if it talked about the firearm, and best I could tell, it just talked about dangerous weapon when it said what the elements of the bank robbery offense was.
That's correct.
Are you aware of that? There was no reference in the charge to the jury that the elements of the bank robbery offense in count one required a firearm. It just said dangerous weapon.
Exactly. That's my point.
And the instructions went out with the jury, right?
That's correct.
In writing.
That's right.
And you objected to that because it allowed the jury to find guilt on count one with a dangerous weapon, but not a firearm.
That's exactly right. And in fact, if I could focus on the jury instruction here, the part of the jury instruction that was most damaging is that the jury was instructed that, quote, the use of a dangerous weapon or device does not require proof that the dangerous weapon or device is actually capable of putting the life of a person in jeopardy. So that negates his theory of defense. I want to go back to Cancellieri, if I could, for a minute, because this court, in various cases post-Cancellieri, they said that it stands for the proposition that where somebody's entire defense is predicated on the surplusage, that even if it is surplusage, that can still be a constructive amendment. Now, I'm not sure whether that makes, doctrinally, whether that makes sense. To me, that would be a prejudicial variance case because he's prejudiced by the variance. But that's what Cancellieri has kind of come to mean. It's sort of an exception to the surplusage doctrine. So when someone predicates their entire defense, as in Cancellieri, where it was knowingly...
But you knew that the district court at the plea proceedings told you that you could plead to count one right. without pleading to the fact that it was a firearm.
That's
and
right.
that should have told you that he thought it was surplusage. And therefore, it doesn't seem to me you can claim that you were surprised by what he did.
I disagree with you, and let me explain why. What the district court said is that, however, he will have to be able to establish all of the elements up to and including that the weapon used in the bank robbery was a dangerous weapon. The district court went on to say, I would suggest that counsel, you consult with Mr. Benitez so that he understands that entering a plea to the bank robbery count and leaving just the possession of a firearm during the commission of the bank robbery is establishing a lot of the elements to that second offense.
But not that it was a firearm.
But she didn't say one way or the other. And look, the government probably could have stood up in open court and waved the plea agreement around and essentially directed verdict on the second count. There was no admonition. So there was an admonition on the one way. Hey, you know, be careful, because if you plead guilty to this, it's establishing a lot of the elements of the second offense. But there was no admonition on the other going the other way, that if you take it to trial, they will be able to prove that it was a toy, and that's enough to sufficient to convict him.
Let me, I think you have a strong case, just frankly, on the law, without regard to this business about your being surprised and prejudiced, because we've got several cases, Weissman and Narag, are right directly on point. But it seems to me we have a lot of other cases that seem to be in tension with those, namely those cases that say in order to be a constructive amendment, there has to be a change with respect to the elements. And, of course, firearm, Velnaw, is not an element. It is dangerous weapon, like the district court ruled. How do you deal with those other cases, and do we have tension amongst our cases?
I think there is some tension. And, you know, as a practitioner, I can't say that the cases are pellucid as to what exactly the prevailing rule is. The rule that we would suggest, and this is consistent with Narag, is that changing the means of satisfying an element can be a constructive amendment if the jury is allowed to convict based on an uncharged set of facts that expands the basis for conviction with respect to that element. So in Narag, to wit, methamphetamine, that you have the broad statutory language, and then you narrow it in, you kind of arrogate upon yourself a higher burden of proof. So to wit, methamphetamine. In Weissman, they said to wit, the decaf, whatever the crime family was, DeCavalcanti crime family, they could have just said a RICO enterprise, but they specified the exact one. But to me, it's indistinguishable from those cases. And then the fact that he was surprised and prejudiced by it, that's where Cancellieri comes in, because it was his entire defense was based on this constructive, disproving this, even if it is surplusage, this extra language. And in addition to that, in addition to all that, we have the stipulations from the government on the other side. So to me, this is a stronger case than all of those cases. And I think that there's really no way that the government can argue that it's not a constructive.
So what would happen here if you were to prevail? They'd re-indict him and take out the firearm, right?
Well, I'll leave that for the government.
I know, but let's talk about the possibilities.
Okay.
You've been acquitted on carrying the firearm during the course of a crime of violence. So right. They could re-indict count one, right?
Or they could just remand count one. I suppose they could re-indict it and omit that language.
Yeah, right. All right, and then we have a trial. It was a two-day trial, mm-hmm. Okay? And as I understand the sentencing on count one, the district court didn't give a firearm enhancement. That would have been six levels. Mm-hmm. Didn't give an obstruction. Didn't give any of the enhancements. Is that not correct?
That's correct, but it didn't.
And back on, he could have, by a preponderance of the evidence, found that this really was a firearm. Right. I mean, he could. This next time, they could find by the preponderance of the evidence, it really was a firearm, correct? That's a possibility?
That's a possibility. It's also a possibility he could just plead guilty to it. It's also a possibility, and we wouldn't really fight too hard if you accepted the government's idea.
I'm just worried about what you're putting your client at risk on going back. I'm just trying to see if there isn't some risk of a greater sentence.
It were the case that they superseded.
But isn't there a risk of a greater sentence here?
I don't believe that. If the court gave him a greater sentence, first of all, the court varied upwards, right? So it enhanced a very severe sentence on Mr.
What is the sentence?
I believe it was 121 months, and I might be wrong on that. But it was there was an upward variance imposed here. So even if the court didn't find...
Yes, because he gave none of the firearm enhancements, did nothing, and said 70 to 87 months guideline range. And, or actually, it was a she.
And right. And varied upward from there.
And do you appeal the sentence at all?
We didn't appeal the sentence.
Because you got no enhancements. It was all base level.
There was nothing to appeal.
Okay.
But I would say if the...
You've answered my questions. You're over. Unless
I apologize, Your Honor.
You were answering. It's not a problem. Thank you.
I reserve the remainder. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Holly Gershow on behalf of the United States. There was only one dangerous weapon involved in this case, the gun that Benitez held in his hand while robbing Iberia Bank on October 8th, 2014. That is the weapon the grand jury charged, and that is the weapon the United States proved at trial. That gun that Benitez held in his hand, that he pointed at the bank employees, that he threatened them with, that caused them to believe that he would kill them if they didn't do what he said. No constructive amendment of the indictment therefore occurred because there was no danger that Benitez was convicted of a crime different than that was charged in the indictment. Moreover, based on the district court's ruling that the firearm language was surplusage and that Benitez could plead guilty to armed bank robbery without admitting that he used a firearm, based on that ruling, Benitez had no reason to believe that he would be able to defend against the armed bank robbery count on the grounds that he used a replica firearm. This case, therefore, is not cancellier and is not an Iraq.
It seems to me, though, that I'm having a hard time getting around Narog and Weissman. I mean, what happened here is precisely the same thing that happened in Narog, where you've got the general language and the narrower language. And then the district court's instruction takes the narrower language out. And I know that we have some cases that say that it's really the elements that count and not the surplusage. And that makes a lot of sense to me, but it seems to me our cases won't let us do that. And even if there is some tension in our cases, it seems to me that the old Supreme Court case, Styrone, resolves it in your opponent's favor, not in your favor. That case, you remember, there was the indictment alleged that the interstate commerce was satisfied by sand, and the district court allowed the jury to satisfy the interstate commerce element by steel. So it seems to me that steel and sand certainly were not elements. It was interstate commerce that was the elements. So it seems to me Styrone stands for the proposition that it it doesn't have to do with the element. That it doesn't have to change the element. It just, if you let the jury find a different means of satisfying the element, that's a constructive amendment as per se. What's wrong with my thinking?
Let me start by addressing Sterone. Your Honor is correct that in Sterone, the indictment charged interference with importation of sand to Pennsylvania and then allowed conviction on the basis of exportation of steel out of Pennsylvania. And what the Supreme Court was troubled with in that case is that the jury could have convicted the defendant on a set of facts wholly and distinctly different from those facts charged by the grand jury. But here, there was only one set of facts charged to the grand jury. The robbery of the bank with that dangerous weapon, that gun that Benitez was using to rob the bank. And whether that gun fired bullets, blanks, or BBs made no difference in the context of armed bank robbery, where the focus is on how the victims perceived that weapon. And so while in Sterone, the defendant could have been convicted on facts that had never even been brought before the grand jury. Here, the exact facts that...
I don't think the grand jury in our case knew that what the jury pretty apparently found was that the gun was not a firearm, but it was a imitation gun.
But the grand jury is only required to find probable cause to believe.
Say that again.
Grand jury is only required to find probable cause to believe that the gun was a firearm. And the same facts that established in this case probable cause to believe the gun was a firearm also established probable cause to believe that it was a replica firearm. The video that was shown, the testimony of the bank employees that they believed that this was a real firearm. And now, turning to Narag, I don't believe that Narag stands for the proposition that any time the grand jury charges, that the United States is required to prove that is. And I think that that is compelled by Dortch and some more, in which the court said Narag is limited to the crime and circumstances of that case, and it doesn't plainly extend to other circumstances, such as in Dortch when they charged a Taurus pistol.
That was in the plain error context.
Correct.
It may be true that Narag is not absolutely controlling, but its rationale, it seems to me, is I can't find an intellectually honest distinction.
I would point, Your Honor, to the fact that in Narag and Weissman, in both cases, the jury instructions mimic the language of the statute, of the indictment as charged, and it was only in response to a jury question in both cases. In Narag, the question was, do we have to convict if we find that he used methamphetamine specifically? And I think it was the jury question that, and the court's response to the jury question, that it could be any controlled substance, is what created the problem in Narag, because that left open the possibility that the jury could have convicted of any controlled substance. But here, we know that the only dangerous weapons that he could have been convicted of was a real firearm or replica firearm. And I think Benitez concedes as much. And so there's a difference between saying, well, he could have been convicted on believing that the pseudoephedrine would be used to manufacture any controlled substance, cocaine, who knows what would have been presented to the grand jury. And in this case, saying he was only convicted of either a real firearm or a replica firearm, and in the context of bank robbery, that makes no legal distinction. So for those reasons, I would say that Narag doesn't control here and Cancellier doesn't control here. And I'd like to address the argument that Benitez made that the United States, quote, stipulated that it was going to prove these. The United States didn't stipulate. The United States made arguments at the change of plea hearing that Benitez couldn't plead guilty because that would constructively amend the indictment. The district court rejected those arguments, and the district court allowed Benitez, said, you can plead guilty to armed bank robbery as long as you admit up to the dangerous weapon. You don't have to admit that it's a firearm. And the United States lost the argument that it made. And so the United States, unlike a stipulation in which the United States might be bound to continue to hold to those stipulations, the United States isn't required to continue to advance arguments once it is lost in the district court. Once the district court told them this language is surplusage, There was no reason to believe that they would have to continue to prove a firearm.
Did the district court actually use the word surplusage in the plea proceedings?
In the plea proceedings, Benitez argued that the language was surplusage, and the United States argued that it would be constructive amendment. The United States submitted case law saying why it wasn't surplusage. The district court said, I've reviewed all of the pleadings, and I'm going to allow Benitez to plead guilty to the armed bank robbery without admitting the firearm. So while she did not specifically use the word surplusage, I think that that was an implied ruling. And in fact, when this issue came up at trial, the district court said, and I think you'll recall that I found this language to be surplusage. So certainly the district court felt that she had made that ruling. And again, after the district court made that ruling at the change of plea, the United States submitted proposed jury instructions. And in those proposed jury instructions, the United States proposed the standard jury instruction for armed bank robbery with no mention of the firearm language.
At what point in the trial did that happen? Was it before or after he testified?
It was months before trial. It was 2 weeks, I believe, before trial. And September 14th was when the United States filed the proposed jury instructions. And then on September 21st, there was a pretrial conference, and the district court asked Benitez about the jury instructions because Benitez hadn't submitted any of his own proposed instructions. And Benitez responded, I think the United States proposed standard instructions are fine. Then at opening statement, the prosecutor said, these are the elements of armed bank robbery. It requires threatening and assaulting and putting in fear with a dangerous weapon. No mention of a firearm for the bank robbery count. No objection by Mr. Benitez. No objection to Mr. Benitez after the United States concluded its opening statement. It wasn't until after the first day of trial that Benitez brought up this potential issue with the jury instruction. So I would say that to the extent Benitez was surprised that this wasn't the United States' position, he wasn't unfairly so.
When did the district court rule on the jury instruction issue?
At the close of trial. She made a tentative ruling on the first day of trial, said, I think you'll recall that this language is surplusage, but then sort of said, I'll reconsider it. And then at the close out, she said, I went back, I looked at what I had said before, and in fact, I had said that this was surplusage, and also there's this case Diverso, and therefore, this is not an element that the United States had to prove, so I'm going to give the standard.
It sounds like the court didn't definitively rule on the issue then until after the close of evidence.
It didn't rule definitively on the jury instruction issue, but it did rule definitively at the change of plea hearing that the language was surplusage. And so the jury instruction issue stemmed directly from that ruling that she had made at the request of Mr. Benitez. He was the one who wanted to plead guilty to count one without admitting that it was a firearm. And the district court made that ruling at a status conference that he could plead guilty, and it wasn't until a month later that he came back and said, no, I've changed my mind, I now want to go to trial. So the idea that he made that decision based on what the United States said, even though that was several months before, and there was this intervening ruling by the district court that this language was surplusage.
What's the law in other circuits about this constructive amendment issue, the legal issue? Other circuits like our Weissman and Narag cases, or are they more like the cases that you would like, namely that to be a constructive amendment, it has to change the element?
They are more like the government's position. And they're also, they, for example, the Second Circuit in DiMillo distinguishes between changing an element and changing a means, and said in that case they had charged several different types of interstate commerce in a child enticement case. They had charged an internet and computer, or some version of interstate commerce, but at trial they had proved a different means of interstate commerce, such as a cell phone. And they said, look, this is the same set of facts. This is not a functionally different crime, and therefore no constructive amendment of the indictment occurred.
What's the name of that case?
D'Amelio. And some more, actually, this court cited D'Amelio in the Samore case when discussing. And in Samore, it discusses other cases from other circuits that have held that merely changing the means does not constructively amend the indictment. The Eighth Circuit has made a similar ruling in McIntosh, in which they said that the type of firearm charge didn't have to be proved. The United States could prove any firearm.
Let me ask you a hypothetical question. What if the indictment had alleged that the dangerous weapon was a knife, and the defendant's whole defense was that my fingerprints aren't on the knife, it's the fingerprints of some other guy who has a history of bank robbery? And then the government said at the end of the trial, oh, it doesn't have to be a knife, it could be any dangerous weapon. What would happen there?
I think that would be, one, a sufficiency of the evidence problem, because if the only evidence is there's a knife and then the United States out of nowhere.
Well, set that aside.
And I think it would be a variance problem and potentially a prejudicial variance depending on what kind of notice the defendant had about the United States theory. But again, in this case, we charged a firearm. We had a 924C offense, which required the proving of a firearm. So all the evidence that the United States was introducing was that it was a firearm. The only determination was this a real firearm or a replica firearm, which, although that did have significance in the context of 924C, had no significance in the context of bank robbery. It was just a simply legally irrelevant fact. It would be like if they alleged that the dangerous weapon was red and at trial they proved the dangerous weapon was pink. That the defendant shouldn't be allowed to put on a defense that says, well, I should have been acquitted because I should have been able to argue that the weapon was pink and not red. And so for this reason, this is not the kind of case that merits per se reversal. This was a case he was charged with a firearm. The United States proved that firearm. He was not convicted of an offense that was distinctly different from the crime charged by the grand jury. For that reason, I would ask you to affirm.
Let me ask you this. Even if it is a variance, why isn't it pretty clear that there was prejudice? Because it's pretty apparent to me that the jury found this was not a firearm. This was a fake made to look like a firearm. Why is that not prejudice?
First of all, I would disagree with Your Honor that it is apparent. We don't know why the jury made the finding that it found, and you can always have inconsistent verdicts. It could have been the case that someone on the jury Googled 924C and found out that it had a mandatory enhanced sentence, and so they split the verdict between bank robbery and the 924C offense. But even still, it wouldn't be. The prejudice that a variance is concerned with is unfair surprise. And here, for the reasons that I stated before, the defendant wasn't unfairly surprised by, shouldn't have been surprised that the United States was.
Really, the answer to the question is you can be convicted of bank robbery if it's a toy weapon, as long as it's perceived under the law a dangerous weapon, even if it's a toy, if it's perceived by the victim as having been real. That's the argument of why there's no prejudice here, because it wasn't inconsistent. You can be convicted of a toy weapon firearm as a bank robbery that constitutes a dangerous weapon.
Yes, Your Honor, you said
which
it.
Which is another way of saying that it was mere surplusage.
Correct.
Well, I think the case law, maybe I'm wrong about that. We've said it can be a toy weapon. Everybody can agree it was a toy weapon. They find it in the car. I think we had a case one time. They actually find it in the car, and it was a toy weapon, but you still have bank robbery.
That's correct.
Because the victim perceived it.
Correct.
So really, the verdict here was quite consistent. I think they thought it was a toy weapon, or at least the government didn't prove. I think what the jury did, they didn't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it was a real gun.
That is one.
That's what it looks like they did, and said it was a toy. But they convicted him of the first one, is a toy weapon.
That's an interpretation.
I don't think the jury gets into what the sentence is and all that kind of business. I think they just thought the government didn't prove for sure it was a real gun.
But again, there was no prejudice to that because he did admit every element of armed bank robbery.
Yeah, he admitted he had a toy weapon.
Yeah.
It looked like a gun. In the video, I've got a picture of the video. It shows, it looks like a gun. It may not have been a gun. I have no idea but it sure looks like a big black gun.
That is true, Your Honor. I see I've exceeded my time.
And actually, I compared that with the photograph of the daughter, and there's markings on the gun that's different than the ones in the photograph of the father, the daughter with her toy gun.
That's correct, and the expert witness.
Yeah. Said, but in any event, I think the jury found the government didn't prove it.
That it didn't prove
a- that it was a real firearm as opposed to what he said, a toy firearm.
Again, that is a likely interpretation of the jury verdict, but the jury's black box. We don't know why the jury finds what it finds.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. And I'd ask you to affirm.
Mr. Greenlee, you'll have your full 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. I want to just return back to what the government said in the change of plea hearing. They said that it could be a defense to the aggravated form of robbery if it was not a firearm. Okay, so this concept that even if, first, and that's number one. Number two, they said, and this is, if this isn't a stipulation, I don't know what is. We would never come into court and argue before the jury that this was anything other than a firearm. If that's not a stipulation, I don't know what is. I want to push back on this concept that it was a definitive ruling. It most certainly was not. The word surplusage never came out of the judge's mouth. The word constructive amendment never came out of the judge's mouth. She just said, I will accept your guilty plea, and it wasn't even entirely clear to what extent the government would be able to use the indictment to essentially direct verdict on the 924C count. So, and if the court has any doubt about that ruling, which was completely ambiguous, if the court has any doubt, go, and I would commend to the court's attention, to look at what his opening statement was. The government talked about what their opening statement was, but his opening statement was, if the jury finds that this was a replica and not a firearm, then he's only guilty of the lesser included offense. And the government didn't object. They objected to something else in the opening statements, but there was no objection there. So when the going got tough at trial, and Mr. Benitez got some traction with his expert witness that it wasn't going to be it wasn't going to be proven that it was a firearm, then and only then did the government try to retract and back away from its stipulation and say, oh, well, actually, it could be a toy technically under the law, which is precisely the opposite of what they led him to believe and what his very theory of defense was at trial. And so under Cancellieri...
I'm confused. Who said lesser included offense in opening the defense lawyer?
The defense lawyer. He said...
Was a lesser included offense, he was saying?
It was simple bank robbery. Mm-hmm. So there's bank robbery with a dangerous device, which we all agree it could be a toy, as long as it incites and puts into fear that it could be a dangerous weapon in the eye of the person who's being threatened with it. We all agree about that. I couldn't contest that here in court. But when the government, as they say in their own words, when we accept a higher burden of proof and we plead things with greater specificity than we need to, then sometimes it works out and other times it doesn't work out. Well, in this case, they wanted to have it both ways. Yeah, it works out when we block him from taking a plea, but then at trial, when they don't like it and he hires an expert and actually...
He didn't block him from taking a plea. The district court ruled against him and said you can plea without admitting it being a firearm.
But they induced him to not take a plea by telling him it could be a defense at trial and that they would never come into court because he took the position that they could never prove it, that it was actually a firearm. So setting aside whether or not the judge's ruling was definitive or not, in my view, it's completely ambiguous. But he still could rely on those assurances, and he plainly did. Look at his opening statement. That's what his whole theory of defense was, is if I prove that this is not a firearm, then I'm only guilty of simple bank robbery. The district court and the government, for that matter, pulled the rug out from his entire defense, vitiated the fairness of the proceedings, and said, well, technically, it could be a toy. That's what they argued to the jury. It could be a toy, and he could still be convicted of the bank robbery charge. So there's no way in the world, under Cancellieri, that this is not either a constructive amendment or B, a very prejudicial variance because it gutted his entire theory of defense. Now, I want to say something about the remedy.
So do you agree with me that the firearm as referenced in the indictment could be a toy firearm?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Well, no,
the indictment charged a firearm, what you're saying is the whole problem here because they didn't do that. But that indictment could be still a good indictment if it was a toy firearm. He could be found guilty of that.
Yes, if they said it's a toy firearm in the indictment, if they alleged...
They don't have to say toy firearm. They don't know. I mean, they just say firearm.
Okay.
And that's enough, and they proved a toy firearm. They did prove a toy firearm, right?
I would put it in the opposite, that he disproved that it was a firearm.
Right.
He hired an expert and disproved that it was a firearm.
They had an expert that said it was a firearm.
Right, they had a rebuttal expert who said, he didn't say it was a firearm. He said it could be converted into something that could fire bullets, right? But Mr. Benitez's attorney said that it would be highly destructive.
I just wonder, to charge Bikram Crabby with a toy firearm, you have to say toy firearm in the indictment.
Well, look,
or is firearm enough?
Our position is that if you specify...
A firearm,
then you have to prove that it is a firearm, and you can't prove and say to the jury, well, it was just a toy. And for that reason, Your Honor...
Well, a toy firearm constitutes a firearm for purposes of this crime.
Well, not when the government... No, no. It, for purposes of this crime, a toy firearm, a toy can be... First, I think it's a contradiction. What is a toy firearm? Okay? I mean, I think it's either a firearm or it's a toy, and firearms are not toys. So I would fight the premise of the question, but if they had said in the indictment a dangerous device, there's no obligation for them to plead that it's a firearm. But in this case, they pled that it was a firearm, and his entire theory of defense was predicated on it not being a firearm, and he carried his burden. So with that, Your Honors, I would say please reverse and remand to the district court. Thank you very much.
Mr. Greenlee, I see that you're court appointed, and the court very much appreciates your work.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate being here.
Call the next case of Carlos.